RadioArchives.com presents Operator No. 5 Magazine from May 1934. The Invisible Empire. The second adventure of James Christopher, Operator No. 5, America's Secret Service Ace. By Frederick C. Davis, writing as Curtis Steele. Read by Richard Epcar. Unseen, impregnable, the strange war machine of a foreign power hovered over America, waiting the fatal moment to hurl death upon 1,000 cities and towns. Foredoomed to destruction and desolation before the ravaging hordes of the Yellow Empire, bleak despair gripped the nation's millions. And then men held their breath in agonizing hope as Operator 5, single-handed, seized the last grim chance to save the United States. And now, James Christopher, Operator No. 5's thrilling adventures, The Invisible Empire.
Chapter 1, Warning from the Sky. At high noon on that steaming midsummer day, a strange cloud darkened the sky above the spires of New York City. It came from nowhere out of the clear heavens, a floating fog which thickened rapidly beneath the sun, casting deep shadow over the entire city, bringing sudden and bewildering gloom. Thousands of eyes turned upward from the chasms of Manhattan to watch it, a stormy blackness slowly lowering. As it settled, it became a mass that fluttered and sparkled and surged. Snow. Snow falling from a cloudless sky on the hottest day of a sizzling summer? The wonder of it brought millions to a standstill in the streets. They watched it blanket down until the peaks of the skyscrapers became misted and disappeared, until the fluttering stuff began to sprinkle into open windows and drift over the pavements. It was not snow, but countless leaflets of paper blackened by heavy printing. While the air cleared and the hot sunlight beat again into the metropolis, millions of eyes read the startling message which the leaflets bore. War. War or peace? Which do you choose? A futile fight against a foe which will inevitably crush defeat upon you? War which will kill all of your loved ones and bring you nothing but indescribable suffering? Utter disaster to all you hold dear? Or peaceful submission to your fate? War or peace? Life or death? Choose. Over all of Manhattan, a flurry of warnings settled. A few minutes later, another cloud of leaflets drifted down upon Long Island. Then a third fluttering mass spread in the sky above the millions crowding toward the great naval airfield at Lakehurst, New Jersey, bringing with it sudden gloom and the chill of terror. Every road leading to the famous airport was choked with thousands of cars. Automobiles were sardined into every available space along the highways. For hours, no wheel had turned. A swarm of people had abandoned their immovable vehicles and were heading on foot toward the naval airbase. Around the field, the crush was indescribable and unprecedented. An army of uniformed men, police, infantry, marines, were keeping the multitude behind the straining ropes framing the tarmac. The doors of the giant hangar yawned open and black. Another small army of men was clustered on the field, clinging to ropes which were binding to the earth the tremendous, glistening silver bag of the Navy's most recently constructed dirigible. The air was fogged with falling leaflets. They dotted the shoulders of the packed multitude. They whitened the field. They clung to the skin of the dirigible. For minutes, the bits of paper continued to snow down while the crowd stood hushed, while men peered at one another with fear and consternation in their puzzled eyes. Near the doors of the tremendous hangar, a radio announcer was speaking rapidly into a microphone.
"And still the strange warnings flutter in the air, ladies and gentlemen. Millions of them have fallen. The police and infantry men are trying to calm the excited crowd. Overhead, army and navy planes are circling, trying to discover the source of the leaflets. We expect to have a report from them shortly. We take you now."
A flight of steps led up to the door of the gondola of the dirigible, and around it a crowd was waiting. Newspapermen, photographers, a few of the elect privileged to fly with the greatest dirigible in the world on its first official flight. In the control cabin, high-ranking officers of the Navy and Army stood also waiting, shoulder to shoulder with members of the President's cabinet. Behind them, another radio announcer was speaking into a hand microphone, from which a wire trailed outside to a technician carrying a portable shortwave transmitter on his back. Flashing from the short aerial supported on poles carried by two other technicians, his voice rang from coast to coast.
"Speaking to you now..."